We did the first Tesla solar roof outside of the United States, the first international project. But because this went public, because there are people who knew about us selling to private equity, I've had a lot of questions. What does that look like? What is an exit strategy? I'm building my business. I'm building wealth. What can I do with that, right? Because...
Hi, this is Daniel Laxtons, and you're listening to the Roofing Business Builder Podcast.
And go ahead and hit subscribe right now and click like and hit the bell so that way you'll be notified when another amazing episode comes out.
Now, I have been in the roofing industry for over 30 years, and I am your personal commercial roofing guru. Today, I have the guest of all guests, a very special guest, because... it's Ken Kelly. He actually sold his roofing business to private equity. Now, he does over $70 million a year. What questions would you ask a person if you owned a roofing business and you want to think about selling it? You know, I talk about this a lot in the show, but this is an incredible experience because Ken shares so much good advice on how to prepare your company and, you know, the stages he went through. You know, I've interviewed people on this show that actually were investors, but we heard it from the investor's perspective. But with Ken Kelly, he actually did it from your perspective, the roofer's perspective. So this is going to be awesome. The intention for this episode is that I can do anything. I can do anything. So when it comes to life, you know, you actually started a roofing business. You know, this was your dream. And, you know, sometimes we look back at our lives and we think, well, how did I get here from there? But if you hold the intention that I can do anything, then you're going to pull that into reality. So let's think about this. Think about selling your roofing business, but let's get the advice from someone that actually went through it, built his business, built it into a multi-million dollar amazing machine that was automated. And now he actually sold it. But there's a lot of things to know from the contractor's perspective. Who would you want to partner with when it comes to selling your business? Let's look into my interview with Ken Kelly. Hey, I'm so happy to have you back, Ken. How's it going?
You're doing great, Daniel. Thanks for having me back.
Man, I mean, you just had a beautiful wedding last year.
Yeah,
it was awesome. Amazing. but now here's the thing though. You've grown a business over the past, I mean, we've known each other for a long time, but I mean, it's been years. But oh my goodness, you really scaled this company. And it wasn't just you working by yourself or just a couple people. You've actually brought on a lot of people. Where do you go from here?
Yeah, good question. So about 2.5 years ago, we started discussions with a private equity firm, and I sold a majority stake of the company into private equity. And the idea was, we have this system, we have these people, and it's my responsibility as a business owner to continue to provide them career opportunities. And I knew that with my current capabilities, I couldn't give them that runway that they need. So we ended up partnering with a private equity firm. They infused us with a bunch of cash. We went out and we started acquiring other companies. We're still acquiring. And the idea is to give our people the opportunity to grow, to expand geographically, to expand into different types of roof systems and so forth. So that's what we're doing. Now we're just over 400 employees, about $65, $70 million a year in size. So yeah, cover the whole state of Florida. It's been fun.
Wow, it's incredible. Have you expanded outside of Florida?
So we've done one-offs outside of Florida, and I'd love to talk to you sometime about maybe our Tesla projects. We did the first Tesla solar roof outside of the United States, the first international project. But, because this went public, because there are people who knew about us selling to private equity, I've had a lot of questions. What does that look like? What is an exit strategy? I'm building my business. I'm building wealth. What can I do with that, right? Because The roofing industry is intrinsically a high risk or high liability industry. So how do you, you know, kind of back your way out of the organization and keep that legacy going? Because you don't want all of your hard work to just go up in flames, right? Mm-hmm. We want to see this continue on without us. And in many cases, nepotism is not the answer. You might have a son or daughter that you want to pass it on to, or a sibling or something. But in many cases, that's not what they want. And so your dreams might not be theirs. So in the past, it's been really popular to do ESOPs, which is a way to structure the shares of the organization to where your employees buy them or you gift them in some form or fashion. But there's some tax liability associated with that. And I would suggest that you consult a tax professional before you make any of these decisions, because there are implications, especially capital gains tax and so forth. But the more popular form of transferring ownership has actually come out of this private equity and merger and acquisition space that's been happening a lot lately. You see and you hear it sweeping the nation. There's a lot of little groups that are forming. And the idea is that in many industries, there have been this roll-up concept where you buy these good companies and different geographic spaces, and you put them under one umbrella. You share systems, let's say software, marketing, buying power, relationships with key manufacturers, and so forth. And eventually, one group would merge with another group, and now you're making a major geographic play. And each time an acquisition occurs, or each time you sell, there's an opportunity for your shares to appreciate, or even you can even cash out at that point too. So people have asked common questions, you know, how much is my business worth? What is life like after sale and so forth? So if you'd like, I can touch on those real quick and give people just the meat and potatoes of what it's like.
Absolutely. Again, we're actually talking about mergers and acquisitions. And I know a lot of people that listen to this podcast, you know, sometimes they're just trying to get going, but there's several people also that listen to the podcast that, you know, they don't necessarily have an exit strategy, or maybe they're just learning about that. And what you just came up with explaining was really enlightening, you know, for people, because it's like we did. I mean, my grandfather was a roofer, and so that's how I got into the industry. But, you know, I have a friend and one in Texas that he's got a business, but his daughters aren't necessarily going to take over the business. And so this is really good for some of those family-owned businesses, of a strategy that they can not only take care of their family legacy, but also do something like this. This is a great idea. And so one I wanted to ask is then, you know, we can go in a little bit more detail on that, how that merger and acquisition works and how they need to later on. I want to talk about how to prepare their company and mentality to get to that point, because it's not going to happen overnight.
Perfect. Let's start with the process. So if you're interested in potentially selling your company, probably you've already been hit up by some private equity firm saying, hey, we're interested in looking at your business and making an offer. And that's great. But what I suggest is starting with a business broker. A business broker is very much like a realtor. Okay. Whether you own property or you just own a business and you rent, the business brokers know the industry and they will help you walk through the pitfalls. They're also going to bring to the table two things that I later found value in that I didn't realize was going to be value. So they're going to do their spiel, but I'm going to tell you the two big benefits to somebody who's a business owner who's going to go down this path. Number one, they're going to bring a lot of players to the table. And it's just like if you were to do an auction, you don't want one person in the audience, right? You want a bunch of people and you want them bidding off of each other. And not only could that give you a better price, but it could also give you better terms. And we'll talk about that in a second. The other thing that they bring to the table is a dose of sanity as you go through the process, because there is a phase called due diligence that is very frustrating, especially for business owners. So let me go back now and explain the process. You go out and you find a business broker, and they're going to put together what's called a SIM. And this is just a memorandum that's advertising the business, looking at what its capability is, what its financials have been, who the key players are, what market they're in, the type of offering, and so forth. So first and foremost, you need to have clean books. A business broker will look at your books, make sure that you're on the right accounting system. You don't want to be on a cash accounting system. You want to be on accrual. They're going to clean things up and make sure that everything fits in the buckets the way it's supposed to. And they're going to help you kind of clean up some of the processes that work for us as business owners, but may not be the best way for a business sale. For instance, a lot of people set up their accounting system because their accountant told them this is how it should be set up. Mm-hmm. Well, the accountant is setting it up for tax preparation, so it's easy for them. It makes it difficult to run a business because we don't really understand the numbers and how they relate to what we need to know in order to grow a business. Do I have enough cash to invest in another truck, or do I not have enough cash, right? So in a business scenario, the accounting's even yet a little different. And the key to this is maximizing profits in what they call EBITDA. EBITDA is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And it's just a big word to say profit, right? It's profit before you pay your taxes. That's what it boils down to. And then some of the other things become add backs. And those add backs drive up the value of the business. So if there was, let's say, for instance, a marketing campaign that you have going on, you're on the radio. Radio advertising averages $1,900 a lead, right? It's probably one of the worst forms of advertising today. Okay. It used to be really good. Not anymore. Like, cut that, because every dollar that you save could be multiples of dollars on a sale. And we'll talk about the pay structure in a minute. So after you get your books in order, bring them over to an accountant and have them review them. You don't have to have it audited. It's not necessary. That's a pretty expensive process, and it's not necessary at this phase, because you're basically going to get an audit when you go into due diligence. Just get it reviewed. A couple $100, the accountant will look through, say, hey, give me a receipt for that. Show me an invoice for this, that you actually did the job, you know, that it's the right amounts and so forth. And then boom, turn that over to your business broker. The broker will come in, take some pictures of your operation, interview some of your people, probably interview a few of your clients, and they'll put together this really nice presentation package on your business. When you read it, you're going to be like, gosh, that's us. It's going to sound really good.
Is that presentation package a pitch deck?
Essentially a pitch deck. It's normally something that can be emailed, so it's like usually a PDF document or something, but it absolutely starts as a PowerPoint, yes.
You're saying that it's going to sound amazing.
It is. I mean, it's just like if you try to sell your house, right? The realtor writes this thing up and you're like, wow, I want to live there. Wait, man, that's my house? You know? That's the way they do it. And it's, you know, the nature of the business, right? Don't worry. The due diligence is going to bring out all the skeletons so they can put lipstick on a pig. If there's a problem, they're going to find it. So don't try to hide anything. You know, it's better just to be upfront about it. And being upfront about it would be, you know, maybe we had an OSHA violation 2 years ago, right? But since we've cleaned up our safety program, and here's how. We have weekly safety meetings. We document any injuries. We have insurance coverage for our employees, whatever it happens to be. Just get it out in the open now, because it'll save you a lot of headache and time down the road. So you've got your accounting. You've got a business broker. They've put this sim out to the world. And what you're going to start receiving is interview requests. And that is, it starts with a letter of interest. It's basically a little letter saying, hey, we're kind of impressed with what you've built. It could be a $500,000 a year company. It could be a $60 million a year company. It doesn't matter. We have all needs and shapes. Like right now, we're not looking for, you know, $10 million firms. We're looking for a nice $3 million firm in a small market that has a really good reputation, right? That's what we're looking for. So that could be some of the people that are listening to this podcast, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about values in a moment. But when you start getting these interview requests, they basically just want to get a feel for who you are. Be yourself, be honest. You know, where do you see yourself in 5 years and 10 years? What's your goal for the business? What do you like to do? What's your background? That kind of stuff. And then as you do more and more of these interviews, you're going to get what's the next phase called a letter of intent. An LOI is basically a letter saying, we are interested in buying you, and this is how much we're willing to offer. If everything comes out in due diligence the way you said it is, this is how much the offer would be. Now, I'd like to stop real quick here and go into a little bit of depth, because there's huge value in this. When we went through this, we had 46 letters of interest. It went down to 12 LOIs, or letters of intent. We took the 12 down to 3, 3 to 2, 2 to 1. We did not pick the company that was offering the most amount of money. And you would think that's strange, right? You'd obviously want to get the most amount. Not true. Imagine you go to sell your house and the person who's buying it says, I'm going to give you half now, but in 3 years, if I still like the house, I'll give you the other half. A lot of business payouts are structured in such a way. And this is a huge warning sign, because if they're not willing to give you the money up front, they don't trust the business. And also, there's a lot of control that's lost after sale. And then you might not be able to control what that trigger is in order to get the rest of your money. It might be, hey, you do at or better than what you've been doing for an average of the last 3 years. Sounds pretty fair. I'm pretty sure I can continue to do that. But then they go in and they change the accounting system and they start accruing funds and paying expenses that you never had before, but they're really just buckets that are holding in case there's an issue, and it drops your profit margin. And you're like, wait a minute. No, that's not, you don't have control over it. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you miss out on the other half of your payment. So there's going to be a lot of those type of games. Your business broker will help you navigate through those games to see what's true and what's achievable and that kind of stuff. Once you have a baseline price set, then if they want to put on top of that an earnout, saying, hey, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, if you increase the business by X in revenue and X in profit, we're going to give you a bonus for doing that. And that's great, because the last thing they want you to do is to take your money and go on a vacation for 3 months, and then the business falters immediately after acquisition. So those are fine, but be careful how they structure the payment. Now, let's say, for instance, you pick the company. You're like, this sounds like a great partner. I want to be part of their network, or I want to be part of that firm. And you go into what's called due diligence. This is probably going to be one of the most stressful times in your entire life, right? You thought you worked hard in the beginning of your business, getting it off the ground. This is going to be harder. What happens is they take a fine-tooth comb and they go through the entire business. They go through its history. They go through any liabilities, any employee injuries, OSHA violations, any customer complaints, any legal lawsuits, any vendor bills that have been delinquent. They go through everything. You may have got everything on track. It may have been a blip because of the economy, right? It doesn't matter. They're going to want proof that it's all taken care of. And after they buy the organization, there's nothing that can come back and hurt them. Now, here's one thing that you want to know and why this is good for you. If you disclose that you had an employee injury 2 years ago, nothing came out of it. He was back to work a week later. Still disclose that, because if later an infection turns out to be something that's serious and you got brain-eating amoeba or I don't know, whatever, and it's a massive lawsuit, the fact that you disclosed it during due diligence washes your hands of it, and then now it's on the new entity and their responsibility, not yours. So disclose everything, even if you think it's a minor thing, and that's a pain. Now, one more important thing about due diligence. The payouts are based on what's called the trailing 12 months EBITDA, your profit for the last 12 months. And that 12 months goes right up to the day you sell. They literally do a calculation the night before and they say, okay, this is profit up to today and the next day you close. Well, if you spend 3 or 4 months going through this due diligence process, which is very realistic, like the 60 is probably the fastest I've ever seen. So let's say 90 to 120 days. If you spend 3 to 4 months distracted from your business, you're not out there selling, you're not out there watching the crews, you're not out there collecting funds, all of a sudden the business starts going down, you miss what could be big bucks in your pocket because you took your eye off the ball. So having a business broker helps you get through that, because they take some of that off of you. You're like, hey, listen, here's access to my Google Drive. All the documents are in there. Just go find what you need and get it to them so I can focus on running the business. It's worth that 5 to 8% that you're going to pay on a broker fee for that. The last piece of this is the closing. It's fairly non-eventful. It's just like you go in and sell a house. You sit down at a title company or maybe even your own office. You sign a bunch of documents. You're on a Zoom call. The attorneys say, we are officially closed. The next thing you know, an hour or two later, you get a sum of money wired into your bank account, right? And then that starts the next phase of your career, because now you got to figure out how to protect that and invest it. But that's pretty much the process. Any questions on that before I get into valuations?
No, but I'm just going to comment that, for everyone listening, this really makes a lot of sense, Ken, because I mean, I love the illustration that you're using for. It's like if you're selling a house, but, you know, people don't understand the roofing industry. So we're always telling a building owner that, hey,
don't try to do this yourself. We know what we're doing. We know all the pitfalls, mistakes, anything that could happen. We've been there. We've done that. There's no way that you don't even do architects, for example. Architects have to hire someone that has our knowledge because they don't know how to do plumbing. They don't know how to do roofing. They don't, they're not trained in that in school. They're trained in designing buildings. And so here's another good thing is if a roofer realizes that there's value in paying a commission to your salesperson, then do you not see the value in paying a commission to a broker that knows how to do this part of the business? You know how to do roofing. The broker knows what they're doing. One question would be is how, you know, you watch movies or different things. They always show worst case scenarios, or there's always terrible, evil people out there, especially in business, and that there's so many greedy companies. But what I'm hearing from you is there are so many legitimate, good people that just know business that you're going to be able to find a good venture capitalist, or is a venture capitalist we're going for that's going to buy this?
Mostly private equity. It could be VC, but mostly private equity.
Private equity. But there are good people out there. They just want a place to park the money so they can keep growing their money.
And that's exactly what's going on right now. If you think about right now what's going on in the market, we're on a downward trend. If you look at bonds and stocks, I mean, they're not really putting out any money. And with inflation at 5 points, you got to do 10 on your return just to get 5 back. So yes, the only place that they can put money right now is in businesses. That's why there's so much out there.
And look at all the businesses out there. Which is the most profitable business out there? I mean, roofing is a very high profitable business. I mean, it's American dream, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. You're exactly right. The one thing that we have that they're not used to is a little bit of seasonality. We tend to go up and down. They like to see more of a consistent, slow growth. So there's a learning curve there for PE firms. But if a PE firm already has a roofer on their books, then they probably already know that. So here's one thing that you really need to know. Only about 15% of entrepreneurs make it more than 1 year post sale. Okay. And that's
because
we're not used to having a boss. You know, they come in with bigger ideas, and
because their ideas work, they're proven and tested. So they know how to make this work. It's hard for us because we're used to making our own decisions.
Right. Right. They're thinking much bigger. Right. So to give you an idea, we had an issue where we weren't getting tile. There was an issue where tile was out 16, 17 months, especially flat tile. And, you know, our PE firm come and said, how much is a tile manufacturing facility? We'll fix this. I'm like, I have no idea how to run a tile manufacturing facility, but that's the mentality that they have. Right. Mm-hmm. So we ultimately did not end up buying a tile manufacturing plant, but that's the mentality. So
that's cool.
How much is your business worth? It kind of fits into brackets, and please don't hold me to this. I'm just telling you kind of a roundabout. This is what the market's at. If you're let's call it a $1 to $3 million a year company, and you're probably dropping 10% to the bottom line in EBITDA, you're probably looking at a trailing 12 months multiple of those earnings of about 3x. So if you made, let's call it 10%, you got $100,000 that you took home for your family, which is really great. Those are good numbers. Anytime you get to double-digit profit in the roofing industry, you're doing very well. That 3X would be $300,000, you know, in a sale price. All right. If you are, let's call it a 3 to maybe an 8 million or a 5 to $8 million company, and you're dropping 10% to the bottom line, you're probably going to be closer to that 4 to 5X. If you're a 10 to $20 million company and you're at 10%, you're probably going to be at a 6 or a 7. And if you're doing better than that, you know, obviously it could be higher. Now, here's the crazy thing. They will pay a higher multiple for more profitable businesses than they will for ones that are doing a higher top line. You need a healthy top line. Don't get me wrong, right? They're not going to buy a $300,000 a year company, right? That's a one-man operation. But if you are a larger company and you have an established leadership team and the company can go on without you, they're going to pay a higher multiple. If you've got a decent amount of cash reserves, they'll probably pay a little bit of higher multiple, what they call working capital. If you are more profitable than 10%, they're going to pay a higher multiple. So think of it this way. If let's say you're 5 times earnings and you're paying $10,000 in a marketing campaign for a billboard that's sitting on the side of the road and is really not bringing you in any money, right? That could be $50,000 on a sale. For every $1 that you save, it could be five times that in a sale. So really look at your profitability and see what you can do now in preparation for an eventual sale, whether it's a year from now or 5 years from now. It's really going to serve you well. And at the end of the day, you decide you're not going to sell. Hey, no problem. You know, at the end of the day, that's just more money in your pocket.
You're more profitable. The other question, you know, a lot of roofers may have this question. Do you, is that multiple, you know, we're talking, so a three times is 3 years. And just to clarify that for some, but also a lot of times they hear that you're going to get paid three times or five times on the gross receipts of the company, or are they going to be paid three to five times on the profit of the company?
It's almost always profit, right? Gross receipts, you may see a deal with gross receipts if you were a software company that created a really revolutionary software platform in a space that nobody is yet, and you just haven't been able to bring a lot of clients on. Mm-hmm. In that situation, maybe they would do it on the little bit of revenue because you haven't made any money, right? But in the roofing industry, it's going to be based on profitability. They want to know if you can make profit, because that's how they sell you later. They're going to take your profit margin. They're going to make you a little bit more profitable just by a hair, maybe 5%, 10%. That's all they're asking for. They're going to bring you together with other like-minded companies. They're going to take that group and then put it on the market. Because remember, I told you, as you get to the next bracket, boom, the multiples go up. Well, imagine you're a $100 million company, because you were four or five little locations and that's making $10 million a year. Now you went from the micro cap space to the mid cap space, and the mid cap space is now 10, 12, 15 times. And it's a totally, totally different scenario.
Wow. Now, how important is it that they have set up good SOPs in their company, their standard operating procedures? Now, that, because, you know, I was talking to this one guy, and he said that if he was purchasing, he was an equity person that I interviewed, and he said that if they don't have SOPs, that he still would do it three times if it was the right, you know, money. And he says, but if they do have SOPs set up to where it's all automated, their company's running itself, he would pay between 5% and 7%.
Yeah, there's truth to that, because, you know, there are people who can become the center of the wheel, the center of the hub, right? And all the spokes come off of that one person, and any business decision comes into them and then goes out to the other person, or goes out to the vendor, goes out to the customer. They could do that without having a real solid automated system. They are the automated system. If you're being acquired, the entity that acquired you would just come in and put in your SOP. They would put in employee manual, safety program, you know, the whole financial tracking of cash, the accounting system, sales processes, everything will be brought in. There's a value for a company that's already established and has a reputation, even if you don't have the SOPs.
But do you have to pay them? I mean, so you can actually have someone really set. Wow. Isn't that incredible though?
That's what we do. You know, my job today is to go into these companies and basically put in our system that's made us successful. And in many cases, I am just totally impressed with the companies and what they have that we haven't even thought of. And we bring that back to our organization. So yeah, there's a lot of sharing of synergies. If you do it right, it works well.
See, there's good people out there. And that's the thing, is most people listening to this podcast too are good people. And that's that we want to always provide great value to our customers, to our community. And it's just a good feeling when I'm hearing things like this and how successful that was for you. But you learned the whole process and then you're sharing it with everyone. And I really appreciate you for that.
You're welcome, Daniel. I'm happy that you invited me back, and I hope that I provided some value to your listeners.
It certainly has. Hey, thanks so much. And we'll keep looking at your success, and we'll check back with you soon.
Sounds good.
And now it's time for Did you know that in the roofing industry, We have seen a significant increase in mergers and acquisitions over this past decade. See, according to Roofing Contractor magazine, the number of roofing contractors acquired by private equity has risen by over 500% since 2010. 500%. So this might be a great time to be thinking about mergers and acquisitions. Another thing that we should know is that to have a successful merger and acquisition can be a win-win for the person that's acquiring you and for you. Just like Ken was talking about, that they actually fed their company money so they could expand even quicker. That means a win for you and a win for them. So when it comes to building your roofing business, we want to build it in a way that we can actually sell it. So if you haven't seen some of my previous Roofing Business Builder episodes that talk about this, you might want to go back through and see some of the reasons why or some of the ways that we can prepare our roofing business to be sold. If you want to speed up your learning pace, say you're a residential contractor that's doing close to $500,000 a year and wants to open up a commercial division, there's a learning curve. And that's why I designed the Roofing Business Builder coaching program. If that sounds like something you're interested in, go to Roofing Business Builder and click on sign up. And then you can do a Calendly call with me. We can talk about where you're at. Or if you want, I have it set up right now where you can just join the program today. Well, that's about it for the Roofing Business Builder podcast. I really appreciate y'all. Remember, I am your commercial roofing guru. Please continue to listen to the different episodes that we have here so that way you can learn and grow your business, especially into commercial roofing.
And go ahead and hit subscribe right now and click like and hit the bell so that way you'll be notified when another amazing episode comes out.
So I appreciate you so much. Until next time, I don't always consult on commercial roofing, but when I do, I make millionaires. Stay wealthy, my friends.